The gruesome show in the gorge over, Doc descended the berm with Isabel. She seemed withdrawn, subdued, pensive.
Mildred made some cogent points about the danger, I thought.
You mean your loose cannon girlfriend?
Mildred is hardly a romantic interest of mine, and I do believe an invasion by a hostile species like the Skagworms could mean disaster for this vill.
I wouldn't call what is happening an invasion.
But you said the number of Skagworms has steadily and rapidly increased of late. I have witnessed their lethality myself in more than one arena. How can you deny the danger you and your people are in?
I don't deny it. Sunspot folk are accustomed to danger. We've lived with it for many years thanks to the Barons. And we have learned how to handle the worms. And they can be handled, I assure you. We are the top dog in the food chain in this corner of Deathlands.
Unless you count Melosh and Haldane.
We will defeat them. Watch and see.
I trust you aren't counting on the Skagworms to help you do that. If you are, I must admit I am stunned.
Why shouldn't we count on them? The Barons and their troops have no experience dealing with them. They don't know anything about their defenses, their habits, or breeding. If the Skagworms attack and chill the Barons, the people of Sunspot no longer have a problem.
My dear, you can't possibly think you can domesticate a 300-pound homicidal insectoid. These worm creatures won't be made into pets or penned like livestock. They are nothing but killer instinct. It is hardwired into their nervous systems.
Isabel turned her face away. Doc gently took hold of her chin and made her look into his eyes.
Listen to me. Even a tiger has some of the same urges as a human being. A tiger protects its offspring. It provides for them, and it teaches them the rudiments of making a living, just as we try to do. These common urges create an empathetic bond between our two species, mammalian species. We humans have nothing in common with Skagworms. Their instincts are alien to us, and they are utterly incomprehensible. Worm sows teach their offspring nothing, nor do they protect them. As a reward, the offspring eat their mothers alive.
We can herd the worms, and we can hunt them.
Isabel, you are missing the point. Skagworms are carnivores, first and foremost. Yes, they will feed on one another when prey is scarce, but they will also eat everything else in their path. They will sweep over Sunspot like the nuke wind. You'll never be able to contain them.
I don't believe there are that many more of them coming. There's no proof that the numbers won't level out or even fall off, that the high point of the population isn't already passed. We have suffered for so long, Doc. Because you weren't here, you can't understand or even imagine our situation, our hopelessness. We're owed this chance.
Indeed, I know you have been hard set upon by fate, and you are correct. I cannot put myself in your place, but you cannot put yourself in mine either. I have good reason to respect Mildred's scientific opinion. She knows whereof she speaks.
Perhaps that's true, but I know what I feel in my heart, and I know what I must do.
Yes, must do. Two of the most regrettable words in the English language.
It seems we've come to a parting of the ways.
Doc reached out and softly stroked her cheek with the back of his hand.
You set fire to my ancient heart, madam. I had forgotten how warmly it could burn.
Not so ancient, then.
I wonder if my companions and I might use your caves to take our leave of Sunspot.
When will you go?
Shortly, I fear.
Kiss me goodbye, then.
Doc leaned down, and she raised her face to meet his. Their lips touched tenderly. Again, the sensation was exquisite and riveting.
I could have loved you, Isabel.
And I could have loved you.
When Doc returned to the companions, Christy was telling the others about what she'd learned of the Ridge's cave system.
What do you think, Doc? You were down there too. Can we retreat through the caves and reach the desert floor?
It is possible if we have a knowledgeable guide. Impossible if we do not. The caves are natural fissures in the rock. Many of them branch off or narrow down to dead ends. Some of them terminate in sheer drops of untold depth. The geology of the ridge is very unstable as well. I saw a man most horribly crushed by falling rock.
Where are we going to find a guide?
Guides, follow me.
The companions trooped after Christy as she headed away from the welcome center.
Do you know what she's up to, Jack?
Uh-uh. Wait and see.
No one stopped or challenged them as they crossed to the lanes of shanties. As long as the conscripts remained inside the berm, they were free to move around as they wished. Christy walked up to a pair of blonde boys, perhaps twins, certainly brothers, who were sitting back-to-back on a tireless truck wheel lying on its side in the dirt. The boys stared wide-eyed at Ryan and JB, whose crusty, grizzled, blood-spattered masculine charm had a powerful appeal to 10-year-old aspiring road warriors.
Will you help us through the caves? Do you know the way to the bottom of the ridge?
We know the way.
What do you want in return for guiding us there?
You saved us twice. We don't want anything from you.
We gotta be careful, though. We're not supposed to take strangers down there. If anyone sees us, we'll be punished and you'll be stopped.
We won't let that happen. Where's the tunnel entrance?
Over in that cargo container. The third from the end.
Go ahead of us. We'll follow you by twos.
They're coming! Get the bear and the bastards are coming!
Stay here, close to the cave entrance. Let's go have a look-see, JB.
Ryan and JB ran back to the berm and scrambled up to its crest.
Nuke in hell!
It was just as Mildred had predicted. The main thrust of the Skagworm invasion hadn't arrived yet, but that arrival was only minutes away. Ryan and JB could see them coming from the south across the desert, up the interstate, and into the gorge. There were tens of thousands of them, perhaps hundreds of thousands of them. They were moving so quickly, their numbers were impossible to estimate. There were so many of them, they turned the sand black, and the front edge of the wave was already slithering up the side of the gorge.
Stop shooting! You're just wasting bullets! Wait until they get closer before you fire! Then blow their fucking heads off!
Ryan knew firsthand how hard the Skagworms were to hit with small arms fire, and how hard they were to kill, even when hit.
Get up here, troops!
Baron Milosh waved the troops forward to defend the berm alongside him. Ryan and JB did just the opposite. As the soldiers rushed up the slope, they rushed down. They ran across the compound, going against the flow of fighters hurrying into action. The flow had dwindled to nothing by the time they reached the companions and the two boys.
It's the Skagworms! Thousands of them! Milosh's troopers will never beat them back. They're going to overrun the berm. We gotta get out of here before they do that.
As they turned down the lane, they came face to face with a Vil's Head woman. Isabel was carrying a folding stock Kalashnikov. Extra mags stuck out of her pants pockets. She wasn't alone. There were at least 40 other armed Vil folk behind her. The rest of the Sunspot population had once again vanished.
What do you think you're doing? You can't fight off the worms. There are too many of them.
Who said anything about fighting worms? We're seizing the moment. It's Milosh and his men we're after, and this is our chance to get them.
You're making a big mistake, Isabel.
It was too late. Kneeling at the end of the lane, Isabel and her followers opened fire on the troopers strung out along the berm top. 10 or so died in that first burst, shot in the back. The survivors, Milosh included, clambered to the gorge side of the berm crest and returned withering fire. Before the companions' eyes, three of the Vil folk were chopped down at the mouth of the lane by multiple bullet strikes. Isabel and the others quickly moved to the cover of a Winnebago's rear end and continued to fire. Ryan stepped up behind Isabel.
Face it, you're not gonna get them all. You gotta pull back to the cave. Let the Skagworms have them.
Are you going to talk or shoot?
When Ryan looked up, he saw the impaler pop up over the top of the berm. Firing his AKs two-handed, the Baron stormed down the slope, leading his troops toward the welcome center.
Stop them!
Ryan brought up his SIG. He sent a couple of the fighters sprawling, but Milosh, his number one target, was already behind the cover of the pre-dark building. Most of Milosh's troopers made it to safety.
Now there's nothing between us and the worms.
They'll be coming over the battlements in a minute or two. Then it'll be too late to do anything.
Isabel, it's time to find cover. We can't do anything more here except die.
All right! Everybody, pull back! We'll join the others in the caves!
They all turned for the cargo container that hid the entrance to the tunnels.
Fire blast! That's incoming!
There wasn't enough time to take shelter. Ryan shielded Christy and the boys with his body. When Ryan looked over his shoulder, he saw a thick pillar of white smoke rising from the middle of the garden, rising straight up in the air.
A
It's a ranging round. It's gotta be Haldane. He's shelling the Ville. Go, go, go!
On the eastern side of Magus's artillery encampment, away from the master and the main body of his road trash, two low-level minions hunkered in the shade of a Winnebago's flank, waiting for the shelling of Sunspot to begin. They had gotten as far from Steel Eye's pounding boombox as they could. One of the minions wore a headband made from a long strip of plastic trash bag. His face was rimmed with dirt mixed with body oils. It made his lips look extra red and his eyeballs extra white. The other man was equally filthy, as if he'd been slathered with lard, then rolled head to foot in coal dust. He sported a dense black beard that came down to the middle of his broad chest. In contrast to their shabby duds and absent personal hygiene, both men carried brand new full auto weapons on canvas shoulder slings.
This job's a piece of cake.
Yeah, I wish they were all this easy. Chilling at long distance is sweet. Only hassle is the loot. There ain't any of that good old hands-on with this one. We get paid out of the price Haldane has given Magus. No extra. Me, I like a treasure hunt. Add some spice to the day.
Folks there on the ridge gonna get a big surprise.
Yeah, some of the buzzards are trying to eat them.
You gonna stick around for Steel Eye's next job?
I don't know. I've been thinking about spending some of the jack I got put away. Maybe take a little vacation from the mercy trade for a while.
You mean 2 weeks in the trailer house, Gaudy?
More like a month. I gotta catch up on my screwing. You heard about what the next job is yet?
Nah, and I know better than to get nosy. Nosy can get you chilled in a hurry around here. What was that?
What was what?
I saw something move over there.
Headband raised his ancient K, using it to point away from the circle of wags. About 20 yards distant, out on the desert, there was a fresh hole in the dirt.
What was it?
Didn't see it that clear. Just caught the butt end of it. It had slipped down the hole. Looked mighty big and meaty. Maybe a nice fat jackrabbit. You a little hungry? Let's go get us a snack.
The pair of road trash spread out and approached the hole gingerly from two sides. Headband paused en route and used his sheath knife to hack off a long branch from a creosote bush. He quickly trimmed off the side stems, creating a pointy stick. Creeping forward, he dropped to his knees in front of the hole and shoved the stick in, poking it around. Beard had his machine pistol ready to fire, his stout legs braced. Headband was trying to encourage whatever it was to pop out of an escape hole so he could blast it with his H&K. Nothing doing.
It ain't coming out. Maybe it ain't a bunny.
What do you mean?
Shit, it could be anything hiding in there. You didn't see it so good.
You sound scared. You scared?
Fuck you, dickweed. Give me that stick.
Beard hunkered down on the ground on his belly and rammed in not just the stick, but his arm all the way to the shoulder. Driving with his legs, he strained as far forward as he could get.
Oh, yeah. I feel something.
Don't let it give you the slip.
I think I got it. Yeah, I got it. It's tugging on the end of the stick. Oh, shit. This sucker's strong.
Beard carefully started backing up, scooting on his knees, pulling his arm and the stick out of the hole. What was clamped onto the end of the probe was no rabbit. It had a black, eyeless, dome-like head and a black segmented shell. Halfway out of the hole, its transverse jaws snapped open, releasing the stick. The jaws looked like ebony meat hooks.
Oh, shit! Chill it!
Before Headband could bring the muzzle of his machine pistol to bear, the creature moved in a sinuous blur, its hundreds of legs churning. It shot out of the hole and ran up under the man's coarse black chin whiskers. It went straight into his mouth. Headband was too preoccupied watching his road buddy roll and thrash in the dirt, unable to dislodge the 2-foot-long attacker, to keep his eyes on the hole. A second black muti scuttled out of the opening, ran across the sand, and up his right leg to his hip. He felt rippling, scratchy bug feet on his chest a second before it sank its pincer jaws into the front of his throat. Even though help was only a few dozen yards away, with their airways cut off, neither of the road trash could scream. Not that screaming would have helped. Out of sight between the parked wags, his arms folded across his chest, Baron Haldane watched the two men's futile struggles with fierce satisfaction on his face.
Shouldn't we do something?
Let him die, Bertram.
The insect muties had saved Haldane the trouble of killing them.
That's what we've been hearing creeping around here all night. What the hell are they?
Fucking deadly, Kuzo, that's what.
Fucking A. Those rat blasts would think to be anywhere.
Could be tunneling under our feet.
They can't eat through Humvees. Safety's off. Keep your eyes peeled.
What about those bodies?
Leave them where they are. Unless you want to risk getting a dose of what those two got.
Well, they might get seen by Magus's man.
So what? We didn't kill them.
Well, they might attract more of those things.
The more, the better. They can do the mopping up for us.
The Baron stepped out from cover and walked away from the corpses. Thorn was still out in the open, under the full sun. The Baron knew he had to be broiling inside that tiny plastic cage. Haldane could see the remote detonator's red arming light. It was blinking. The Doomy Oracle hadn't said that his son would be put in danger. Had it slipped his mind? Or had he just not seen it coming? Either way, another killing was on tap when Haldane got back to Nuevaville. Maybe he'd tossed the whole lot of them over the cliff. His plan for rescuing his son was to hit Steel Eyes and his men with an all-out assault as soon as the last of the chemical weapon rounds was fired. Before that happened, he and his Sekhmen had to put some of Magus's wags out of commission. From what he'd seen of the remote detonator and the firing device, he figured they had to be radio-controlled. Which meant the only way to block the omnidirectional signal was to surround the pet carrier in a thick lead box, which, of course, he had no access to. Shooting the firing device out of Magus's hand was a dicey proposition, even at close range, and the half-man still might be able to detonate the bomb before he was hit. The guards surrounding Steel Eyes would expect an attack on foot and would be prepared to thwart it. Without the element of surprise, there was no way to free Thorn. His plan involved not only what he hoped was surprise, but a critical supposition about why Magus had ordered his men to draw a wide perimeter around the cage. If the explosive device on the carrier had had a motion sensor on it, there was no need for the circle in the dirt. Just touching it would have set it off. If the bomb didn't have a motion sensor, then it could be removed. Even if Haldane was right, he knew the odds for success were piss poor. But failure had its compensations. If father and son were both blown up in the attempt, at least Thorn wouldn't be vivisected, and the Baron wouldn't have to live with the fact that he could do nothing to stop it. Magus came into view, lounging in his throne chair. He raised his hand and made a circular motion to the gunner waiting beside the cannon in the middle of the ring of wags. Steel Eyes reached up and turned off his auditory sensors. Sticking a finger in the ear facing the gun, the gunner yanked the lanyard with his other hand. Magus turned his ears back on. Haldane couldn't follow the round as it streaked downrange. It flew too fast and too high. A puff of white erupted over Sunspot's ridge, plainly visible in the bright sunlight. The shell had landed inside the berm. Its smoke swept east into the canyon. The breeze over the target was blowing from left to right, thanks to the funneling effect of the gorge.
Nice shooting! Let's see if you can lay another one in the ten ring.
As the gunner and his crew started to reload, Haldane and his seven Sekhmen retreated along the outside of the ring of wags. When they were out of sight, they broke and ran. The goal was to decommission all but three of the fastest vehicles. They ignored the Winnebago Braves and the Mil-Spec 6x6s, which didn't have the top-end speed to keep up with the Humvees. They moved quickly to their pre-assigned targets. Easing a Hummer's front passenger door open, Kuzo slipped inside, across the seats. He reached under the dashboard for the ignition wires. Yanking down a bundle of brightly colored wiring, he slashed through it with his sheath knife several times, cutting it into short, useless pieces. As Haldane stood guard for Kuzo, the landship's blonde dreadlocked caretaker stepped out of nowhere, appearing right in his face. Before the man could yell a warning, the Baron jammed the muzzle of his Remington sawed-off hard against his chest. He fired just as the second smoke round launched. The sick man hit the ground, limp and lifeless. The yank-and-slash sabotage of three Humvees took a little more than 2 minutes, and was accomplished without raising an alarm. Haldane crouched on the passenger side of one of the still operational SUVs, while Kuzo crawled in behind the steering wheel. In the middle of the wag circle, the gunner was finishing his final calculations for the third shot. Through the Humvee's grimy side window windshield, the Baron saw Kuzo, reach for the ignition switch. Malash was stunned when he recognized the missile as a targeting round. Even though such weapons existed in the arsenals, cached in hidden stockpiles, no more than a handful of Deathlanders understood how to use them. Like so many other elements of Whitecoat science, ballistics was a semi-lost art. Artillery wasn't favored in post-apocalypse warfare because the stationary targets, isolated bills, weren't so well defended that they required bombardment. And at the first sign of a shelling, the human targets could usually run away. In this case, that wasn't possible. There was no time to run, and nowhere to go. The second smoke round hit the top of the berm near the western gate. The Baron knew the bill had been effectively bracketed. Moreover, he and his fighters were sandwiched between cannon fire and the waves of muties slithering up the side of the gorge.
Haldane, it has to be. Bastard has us trapped. Inside! Get inside!
The fighters followed Malash and his horse into the welcome center. Malash figured that the basement was deep enough and strong enough to withstand high-explosive shelling. In addition, the welcome center's entrances and exits could be either blocked or defended against all comers. The building's narrow entrance would force the attacking worms into tight bunches, which were made to order for autofire to grind into pulp.
Get the fodder out of here!
The troopers started shoving the terrified unarmed men and women out the front doors. The sponges had already cleared out most of the Haldane garrison's corpses. The place still reeked of burnt Comp B and spilled guts. Malash didn't try to lead his horse down the steep staircase. He left it in the reception area.
You five men! Whatever you do, keep the worms out! Defend the entrance!
When the first smoke round had exploded, Crad and Bezoar lay prostrate behind the tarp load of body parts they had been carrying. They had been pinned down by the intense crossfire between the Billfolk and Malash's forces. Neither of the swineherds had understood the significance of the plume of white smoke, but they couldn't miss its consequence. The Billfolk had headed for cover. Now Bezoar started to get up, but Crad snatched hold of his arm and held him down.
Not safe!
We gotta find some place to hide.
Hide from what?
Oh, shit.
Bezoar pushed to his feet. As he turned toward the welcome center, he saw Malash, his horse, and his troopers retreating through the ruined entryway. Then there was movement along the entire gorge side of the berm. Black, shiny creatures topped the crest, climbing over one another's backs in their eagerness.
Oh, no!
The tide of skagworms tore into the dead fighters sprawled along the inside of the slope. There were lots of bodies, and they were still warm. Thus occupied, the muty predators didn't bother to chase down the living, yet.
Come on!
Bezoar grabbed his young friend by the hand. They hip-hopped across the compound to the corner of the welcome center, then turned into the building's entrance.
You five men! Whatever you do, keep the worms out! Defend the entrance!
Let us in! Please!
Bezoar was shot in the gut. He fell back into Crad's arms, clutching his stomach. As Crad pulled him out of the line of fire, the entrance guards all cut loose, sending a withering message to anyone else thinking of rushing the stronghold. The young swineherd leaned his friend back against the side of the building. When he looked up, he saw that the skagworms were animating the Bermtop's corpses. In their feeding frenzy, they made arms quiver, chests heave. Headless bodies appeared to be crawling down the slope. Bezoar squeezed Crad's hand hard. Under his grisly beard, his face was dead pale. The burst of smoke was different from this third missile. It was much more dense, and not white, but sickly yellow-green. Pushed by the prevailing breeze, it rained a superfine, sticky mist. The fodder and the swampies caught out of doors froze in place as the mist enveloped them. Those closest to the ground burst clutched their throats, staggered a step or two, and toppled onto their faces in the dirt. Their legs kicked spastically, going nowhere. The hellhounds fell to the ground, frothing at the mouth and nose, and fighting through their own rooms. Even the muty worms weren't immune. They lashed and squirmed in place, digging their own shallow graves in the compound's packed earth.
Don't breathe it in, Crad! Just... run!
Bezoar's calloused fingers relaxed their grip on Crad's hand. Crad knew his friend was gone, and that he was alone. Crad sucked down the deepest breath he could and took off along the berm, running as fast as he could for the west gate. The sticky mist swirled around him, dotted his pumping arms and sweating face. He blinked it out of his eyes. Halfway to the gate, his vision began to blur. His eyes and nose streamed tears and mucus. His throat felt like it was closing up. He wanted to cough, but he gritted his teeth and swallowed. 3 steps later, he couldn't hold it back. Staggering forward like a marathon runner stretching for the finish tape, he reached the rear bumper of the footgate. As his fingers touched it, he collapsed. In the torchlit basement stronghold of the Welcome Center, Baron Milosh waited for the earth-shaking explosion, but it never came.
What's happened out there?
Gas.
The fodder outside had indeed been gassed. The chemical weapons were heavier than air. The invisible gases were designed to sink to the lowest point, to wipe out anyone hiding in a below-ground shelter. In this case, that was the basement. To stay below ground was certain death. Clamping a gloved hand over the mesh of his mask, he bolted from the stronghold and ran up the steps to the ground floor. Some of the less affected troopers tried to follow him. They fell along the way as their legs gave out. The Baron found his treasured horse in convulsions on the reception room floor. The entrance guards were likewise down. Milosh burst out of the doorway, his hand still covering the mask hole. Sunlight filtered through gauzy yellow-green clouds. The Baron shielded his eyes from the falling mist with his other hand. He ran headlong, stumbling over the corpses of humans, muties, and skagworms. He knew he'd been dosed, though perhaps less than fatally. His head had started to throb, the pain centered in the middle of his eyes. He had to get upwind of the toxins to have any hope of surviving. He couldn't scale the berm, because his legs were already starting to feel weak. The closest exit was the footgate. He reached it without drawing another breath, but as he stepped over the body lying in front of the back bumper, something seized his left ankle in an iron grip. Milosh looked down. One of his own fodder, a barrel-chested drooly, had him by the foot. The Baron started mule-kicking the stoop in the face, breaking out his teeth with the heel of his boot. But his kicks soon weakened, and his knees buckled. He sat hard beside the bloody-faced fodder. Even though the dying fingers let go of his ankle, the Baron couldn't get up from the ground. He had to breathe. But little air came through his constricted airway. Above the edge of the leather mask, his face was slowly turning blue. Milosh ripped off the mask. Under it, there was no hideous battle scar, no putrid decay from rad cancer, no mutated mandibles. Framed by the pasty patch of skin from nose to chin were a pair of baby lips, a tiny rosebud of a mouth, feminine, infantile, and ridiculous in his wide face and masculine jaw. Most un-Baron-like. Who would take orders from a mouth like that? A mouth perpetually pursed to suckle at its mother's bulging tit. Who would march at its command into the jaws of death? Not even an idiot. Milosh had concealed his genetic flaw with black leather and brutal skewerings. Now there was no one left alive to see the truth. No one left to snicker and laugh, to mock him. Every structure, every inch of the grounds, was painted in yellow-green toxin. It had penetrated deep into the Welcome Center, filling the basement with a lethal concentration of fumes. There lay a jumble of corpses, their faces blue and bloodied, in their struggles with death and with one another. The oncoming wave of skagworms had turned back from the flanks of the berm, as members of their species had slid dead on their backs down the slope, spreading death by contact. Sensing their mortal danger, the worms on the gorge below cut a wide path around Sunspot. Everything that Sunspot had ever been, everything that it had ever hoped to be, was left to rot. Ryan was the last through the door hacked into the side of the cargo container. It took a second for his eye to adjust to the dim light. At the far end of the steel box, a wood stove on a platform had been swung aside, revealing a hole in the floor. The two boys disappeared down it, followed by Isabel, Doc, Christy, Jack, and Mildred. JB squashed down his hat and jumped in after Mildred. Ryan looked down into the opening and saw the floor of the tunnel about 4 feet below, lit by flickering torches. He hopped through the hole, turned and pulled the stove platform back over the hole to cover their retreat. After a 4 or 5 foot crawl, the floor of the passage dropped away from the ceiling, but he could stand upright. There was no wood or metal beam bracing of the tunnel walls or roof. The passage was a fissure cracked in the naked rock. Ahead, he could see JB vanishing around a turn. The tunnel angled down, but not down far enough to suit Ryan. It opened onto a low-ceilinged chamber where the entire villa appeared to be waiting. Thanks to torches set in the stone walls, he could see weapons, ammo canisters, and shoulder to shoulder, men, women, and children.
You can't stay here. If the ground overhead takes a direct hit of high explosive, this room will cave in.
We're just fine here. There's 20 feet of solid rock above us.
And it's all gonna come down on your heads. You have to evacuate the tunnels. Get out at the bottom of the ridge and let Haldane finish off Balazs.
We're not leaving. We need to be here when Haldane tries to retake the Ville. We've got a big surprise for him.
What about the worms?
I told you we know how to handle them.
Is that a third smoke round? Why would they need a third?
Maybe the breeze is shifting topside, and they had to bust another smoke bomb to nail down the zero.
Come with us, Isabel, please, before it is too late.
Goodbye again, Theo.
Do what you want, but we're leaving. Just point us in the right direction.
You'll get lost for sure. You need somebody to show you the way out. We'll do it. We said we'd do it.
No, you will not.
The woman who had spoken up was obviously the boy's mother, or a close-blood relative. She had the same color eyes and hair.
You stay here where you'll be safe, and I'll take them myself.
The woman slung an AK, grabbed a torch, and led them out a side passage. Jack and Ryan took torches as well. The chosen tunnel began to descend at a steep angle almost immediately. In places it narrowed so much that they had to turn sideways to squeeze past the opposing walls. Ahead, the corridor ceiling necked down. They had to crawl on hands and knees to pass through the gap. It was hot in the passage, and getting hotter the deeper they went. Sweat peeled down the sides of Ryan's face and trickled along his scalp. The air was noticeably stale. The reason for this soon became clear. 30 feet farther on, the passage was completely blocked off by a floor-to-ceiling pile of rocks.
We gotta reopen the tunnel. Wide enough to squeeze through.
Why is it sealed off?
Skagworms were using it to get at our livestock.
The companions pitched in, and in a matter of minutes they had opened a 2.5 foot diameter hole at the top of the pile, near the tunnel roof.
Gaia, that's fresh air.
We should be close to the exit at the bottom of the ridge then.
The guide climbed up the pile and squirmed through the opening, torch first. One by one, the companions followed. On the other side of the barrier, the arms-width passage descended in a steep, straight incline. The flow of air was much stronger, almost a wind.
Hold it! Listen. Pull back!
No, we'd never make it. They'd pull us down from behind. We've got to hold them off here or die trying. Jack, plant your torch. Everybody, weapons up.
This isn't gonna be pretty.
I'm going back to the Ville. I'm sealing up the hole after I get through it. If you want to go ahead, you're on your own.
JB stepped in front of the others, his Uzi held level in both hands. The passage was so narrow that only one person could fire at a time. When the skagworms came, they didn't just run along the tunnel floor, they scampered across the walls and ceiling, too. The second JB saw their shiny helmet heads, he opened fire. Their bodies dropped from the ceiling and walls, tumbling onto their dead fellows on the cave floor. JB emptied his Uzi in short order. He let it fall on its neck lanyard and swung with his 12-gauge. When that came up empty too, JB spun away, letting Ryan take the lead. Ryan picked off the 4-inch white targets as fast as they appeared. Even so, their bodies were falling closer and closer to him. In the flickering light, the heaps of dying skagworms writhed and thrashed. When Ryan slide-locked back, he stepped aside for Doc, who raised his Lama. Not one skagworm got past Doc. There were more where they came from.
Gotta move back!
Ryan still had 6 rounds in his SIG when the worm wave suddenly faltered and stopped.
Looks like we won. Let's get the hell out of here. Watch your step.
They trotted downhill. On the far side of the patch of dead, the footing was better. They made quick time to the circle of light at the end of the tunnel. After Jack and Ryan made sure there were no worms lurking just outside, the companions left the cave and headed upwind as fast as they could run, moving west of the Ville, away from the spear point of the insectoid invasion, parallel to Interstate 10. The way west was free from human cold hearts as well, because all of Malasha's fighters were up in Sunspot. It was too quiet. Ryan didn't like it. Baron Haldane wouldn't have called off the bombardment after locking in the range, and he wouldn't have laid down a bunch of smoke rounds just for the hell of it.
Maybe the worms got them all.
What had actually happened was something much, much worse. When the companions were far enough from the ridge to get a view of the summit, they could see thick plumes of yellow-green smoke angling upward, stretching 500 or 600 feet in the air. They stopped to catch their breath and to stare.
That's not from a ranging round.
What is it, then?
High above the Ville, a sparse flock of buzzards descended, spiraling down to the feast. Long before they reached the top of the column of sickly smoke, they crumpled in midair, every one of them, and fell like stones from the sky.
Oh my God!
Kuzo started the engine. As he popped it into gear and swerved out of the wag circle, Haldane ran low and out of sight on the passenger side. Kuzo shifted into second and flattened the accelerator against the firewall, taking dead aim at the captain's chair and the half-human thing that sat on it. As Magus turned in his chair to look, his alert bodyguard stepped right into the Humvee's path and raised their machine pistols. Baron Haldane sprinted away from the wag, making a beeline for the booby-trapped pet carrier. Kuzo ducked below the dash as a 9mm slug stitched across his front window, blowing glass shards over his back. He plowed into one of the SecMen, flipping his body up and over the SUV's roof. The other bodyguard barely managed to scramble out of the way on all fours. Magus backed up around his captain's chair.
Help! Help me, you idiots!
Magus still had the detonator clutched in his hand, but he wasn't looking over at the pet carrier. He was too occupied by the startling, seemingly suicidal vehicular assault. Meanwhile, Haldane had dashed across the death circle, knelt in front of the carrier, and ripped the explosive package off the door. Magus realized what was happening and jammed his thumb down on the trigger. It was too late. Haldane had thrown the explosive package into the air, where it had exploded harmlessly. Fishtailing the wag, Kuzo took aim at Haldane and the carrier. As he did so, two other stolen Humvees tore out of the circle, catching broadside gunfire as they passed the road trash. From the back seats of the Humvees, two of Haldane's men returned fire, but were overwhelmed and undone by hundreds of incoming slugs. One of the Humvees immediately coasted to a stop, the inside of its surviving windows tinted red from a cranial back splatter. The other Humvee kept going, but no one was driving. The road trash turned their fire on the rear of Kuzo's Humvee. Suddenly, 2-foot-long creatures were popping up from the soil all around them, even from between their boots, like black maggots squirming out of a long-dead, hollowed-out rat. They swarmed from the shadows under the parked wags, turning the ground black and shiny. Attacked from all sides at once, Magus and SecMen stood back-to-back and fired full auto. Even at 500 rounds a minute, they couldn't keep up with the worms. There were too many of them popping up, and they moved too quickly over open ground. Around the broken circle, some of the luckier road trash got behind solid cover. The worms were coming for Haldane, too. He held his fire and blew them apart at close range, defending his caged son with double-aught buck. Kuzo drove over dozens of the meeting insects, crushing them. He skidded the Humvee to a stop in front of Haldane. The Baron hoisted the pet carrier by its top handle and swung it onto the back seat. Over the wag's roof, he saw Magus momentarily holding his own, while 5 or 6 black worms bit into the metal struts on his legs. Steel Eyes held worms in his bare hands. His half-mechanical fingers crushed their domed heads like raw eggs. Kuzo had the Humvee rolling again before the Baron could get both feet in the cab. Haldane saw the blood all over the wag's interior. The steering wheel was slick with it.
Are you hit?
Shit, yes. Look at the floorboards.
Let me drive.
No time to make a switch. We gotta put some distance between us and them.
You're going the wrong way. Nueva Ville is behind us.
Yeah, I'm gonna cut around to the northwest. Swing wide of the Sunspot Bridge and miss those nasty black critters.
Haldane stuck his head out of the passenger side window and looked behind them.
Don't think anyone is coming after us yet. No dust clouds but ours. You want me to drive so you can see to that wound you got?
I think it stopped bleeding some. Hurts like a muting bitch, though. Look, I'll give you the wheel after we cross old Interstate 10. I can see it about 3 miles ahead. We should be well in the clear by then.
Haldane twisted around to the back seat. He rattled the padlock on the pet carrier door. It seemed plenty solid. It had a case-hardened frame. Even if he'd had the proper tools, he'd have had a tough time getting it open with the lurching, bucking motion of the wag.
I'm sorry, I can't get the door open for you, son. It's gonna have to wait until we stop for a minute. Then I'll shoot the damn lock off, I promise.
I'm okay, Dad. Don't worry about me. I can wait all day if I have to.
Through the dusty, cracked windshield, Interstate 10 became an ever more distinct ribbon across their path. Kuzo kept the pedal to the metal, even as they neared the edge of the ruined roadway. The desert ahead looked fairly flat, except for occasional hidden dips. Without warning, a huge creature emerged from one of those depressions, right in front of them. Its hairy jointed legs looked like tree trunks. Kuzo swerved to avoid a fatal collision with the thing, and the Humvee went airborne.
Why would Haldane fire poison gas on his own troops?
The price of final victory is steep. He managed to chill his arch rival and his whole army.
Not only that, the bastard slaughtered every living soul in Sunspot. Chem gas is heavy. It seeps underground. The Ville folk are all dead, too. You can bet on that.
If Isabel had only listened to me...
You couldn't have forced her to come with us. She made her choice.
That absolves me of nothing. I failed her by not making a better case.
You're not responsible for what happened to her. Baron Haldane is responsible.
Haldane didn't have to use gas to win the war. The invading Skagworms would have finished off Melosh and his army. If the worms take root here, this strip of land isn't going to be habitable for a long, long time. Maybe not ever.
So he bloodied his hands for nothing.
Looks like.
Jack pointed at the horizon.
Wags, there.
The morning sun illuminated beige clouds of dust. Big wags, daisy-chaining. The multi-vehicle convoy was moving slowly south, away from Sunspot.
Haldane is making his getaway.
Nueva Ville is the other direction.
Another wag.
I don't see anything.
If Jack says there's a wag, there's a wag. Let's go check it out.
The companions smelled the wreck long before they saw it. Spilled antifreeze, cloyingly sweet, rode on the eastward breeze. After they had crossed the interstate and climbed over the hump of the shoulder, the Humvee's up-tilted rear end came into view. Spreading out, they advanced on the wag. The Humvee had taken a header into the bottom of the gully. The front windshield was broken out. The hood popped and buckled. There were no signs of life, but plenty of signs of death. The hood was streaked and smeared with fresh blood.
Dad?
The companions quickly circled the wag. When Ryan looked in the back seat, he saw the plastic box. It was just big enough to hold a small child. Ryan turned the carrier on the seat.
Damn.
He swung the carrier out of the Humvee and put it on the ground.
Cover your ears and turn your head away from the bars, boy.
He put the muzzle of the SIG against the lock. Mildred bent and helped the child out of the cage. He was shaking all over, wringing wet, and there was blood on his bruised chin.
Where's my dad?
Who's your dad?
Baron Haldane. I'm Thorn Haldane.
He was with you?
He was in the front seat with Kuzo. We crashed and I got knocked out. Where's my dad?
Ryan looked at the gore smeared on the hood and all the churned up dirt in the gully bottom. Lots of feet had been moving around the wreck. Heavy ones. Cotter knew what had made the tracks. He and the companions had seen the beast from the battlements of Sunspot, fleeing from a pack of skagworms. It had to be the Gravedigger.
Don't worry, Thorn. We'll get you home safe.
It took my dad, didn't it? Didn't it? The Muni thing. I saw it right before we crashed.
I'm sorry. There's no sign of your father, Thorne.
All that's left is this.
That's my dad's!
Ryan took the sawed-off Remington 1100 from JB. He jacked out the live rounds and handed the weapon to the boy. Thorne cradled it hard against his chest, tears streaming down his cheeks.
We've got some heavy walking ahead of us, son. If you get tired, you let me know. I'll carry your blaster for you until you get home.
Deathlands Sunspot is a graphic audio production. Deathlands is a trademark owned by Harlequin Enterprises Limited, used by others under license. Copyright 2007, Worldwide Library. Production copyright 2008, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Richard Rowan, Terrence Aselford, Colleen Delaney, Dolores King-Williams, Nanette Savard, Ken Jackson, David Coyne, Christopher Graybill, Thomas Penny, Tim Carlin, Michael Glenn, Elizabeth Demery, James Konacek, Karen Carbone, James Lewis, Eric Messner, Michael John Casey, Johan Detweiler, and Mort Shelby. Additional red shirts performed by The Dead Giveaways. Directed by Bob Supan. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornette. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Greg Reinfeld and Brian Rogers. The Deathlands theme was composed by Mark Ashby. Additional original music by Brian Patton and Matt Webb. Book adapted for graphic audio by Casey Jones. If you enjoy Deathlands, be sure to look for James Axler's Outlanders, available at Roadstops Everywhere, at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net.
Captain Harris Serrano, scion of a long and illustrious line of officers, has been forced to resign in disgrace from Spacefleet. Her new assignment, civilian captain of the luxury yacht, Sweet Delight.
Tell us about your new captain. Why you choose such a Spacefleet officer?
I thought an officer from the regular space service would know how to maintain discipline and follow my orders.
Captain, I'd like to speak to you.
Don't you ever come on my bridge again, mister.
But I want to apologize.
You can apologize to my crew for nearly getting us all killed. And then you can go away and not come back.
Captain!
What is it?
Computer says dangerous chemical. Sulfur something. Someone was there but isn't moving.
Get those backups down here. Make sure they have their helmets locked on. I'm going in.
Damn military arrogance. She hit me. The owner's family. Just you wait. I'll get even with her. Bandon Field. Permission to land and refuel. Number 002413. We're low on fuel, Bandon Field.
Permission denied.
Look out!
Captain Serrano, how nice to have you aboard.
Don't miss the launch of Graphic Audio's gripping new space adventure, The Serrano Legacy, Book 1, Part 1, Hunting Party.
If you can't find that hot Graphic Audio title you're looking for, just head to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD or MP3 disc format. Or, the fastest and cheapest way, download that puppy and play it on any of the many devices that'll play Windows Media. And if you're on the road or just a total computer feeb, snatch up the phone and call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net.